Okay, tell us about how you came to buy the land out here in Florence and how all that came about.
Okay, I hope I can remember today what we're supposed to do. We moved to 17th Street in Temple because Mary could not ride the bus because she was sick. And I told you on the other side that she had nephritis. All right, we lived in Elm 17th Street, and Clayton needed to spend his government money. The government loaned everybody $10,000, I think it was, and at 5% interest. So Clayton found the land, he bought it, everything. Clayton always paid all the bills. Clayton knew everything that was going on. He arranged for everything. And he bought this land, so it was a surprise to me when we came out here.
But you didn't just buy this land, didn't you?
I'm getting to it.
Didn't it get bought with someone?
Yes.
Okay.
Clayton bought 100 acres, 102 acres, and it was, the land was raw. There was nothing but rocks and prickly pears and briars and a lot of live oak trees. So on his mind then was deer hunting. And so he bought it. That's the parole officer. He bought it and brought it out and showed it to me, and I was pleased with it. And we didn't need 100 acres. And Buddy and Desi Honeycutt wanted to spend their money, his allotment or whatever it was called at that time, I used to know. So they took, both of them together bought it. And they flipped a coin to see who got the...
Go ahead.
So they bought the land together. And they flipped a coin to see who would get the back part of the place and who would get the front part of the place. And on the front part of the place, there was a barn and a stock, a real good, deep stock tank. And Buddy got the front, and we got the back with nothing but wore-out fences and briars and rocks and trees. And so... the first thing we did was buy a mobile home and put it out here. And we cleared. I would clear all day while he was at work. And then he would come home and get the bigger stuff that I couldn't clear.
Now tell everybody what you mean by cleared.
Okay, clearing means cutting everything down that's not good. We saved all the live oaks and all of the Spanish oaks, and we cut a trail. The first thing we had to do was, after we moved out here, is drill a well. And so we did, and the well was 750 feet deep, I believe it was at the time.
But, wait just a minute, back up to what you did before you drilled that well. Didn't you invite somebody out here to try to find water first?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There's so much to tell that my mind is just flooded.
Okay.
We got a water witch.
Yeah.
And Mom and Daddy was out here then.
Yeah.
And we were just enjoying the land and running into briars and everything. And but I found out I could do it. Anybody can do it. You can do it with a wire coat hanger.
Right. You water witching.
Yeah, we were water witching, and we found water.
I remember where it is.
Okay.
Where it was.
Okay. We, and so we dug there, and we got 15 feet, and the water was 16 feet. It was two, the water was 16 feet is all it, we had to drill for a shallow well, but we hit flint rock. And the the man that was, you couldn't make it, you could not go through Flint Rock without a diamond bit.
What was his name? I kind of almost remember him, his name, but...
Green? No.
I want to think it was Hosher or somebody.
I can't remember his name.
Oh, it's going to come to us. Anyway, yeah, he had this big old drill and he drilled down.
Yes, he was drilling for water.
Yeah.
And he hit, no, not a big drill then. We couldn't get, we were drilling with something, maybe hand bailed, a hand. I guess we were digging by hand. We got down 15 feet and hit the solid rock, and it was going to take a diamond bit. And so the man that drilled the well evidently had a diamond bit because he drilled 750 feet deep. And we put one pump in at 450 feet. So we had water at 450 feet. And we were down 750 feet. And I cut a trail between the mobile home, the well, and then we decided on a mobile home place. We hadn't bought the mobile home yet. And it was all on a very slant, a side of a hill. It was on the side of a hill. But I cleared a place for the mobile home, and they brought it out. And but first, our neighbor had a road grader, and he liked to get drunk. And run that road grader just as fast as he could. So he saw what a side of the hill was going to be, for the mobile home would have to be, to back it in there would have to be about 5 feet off of the ground. So he took his rig, and Clayton, all he did was keep him in beer. He said he would do the job for all the beer he could drink. And he was having a high heel good time by the time he got through.
Do you remember his name?
No.
The neighbor? Okay.
No, I can remember it at night and when I'm sometimes, but I can't now. And he built up 5 feet of dirt so that our mobile home would be level. And then Clayton put the water from the well to the mobile home. And I don't know how many years we lived in it, but we were both thinking about, at different times, I was thinking about building a house underground. And he was doing the same thing.
Hmm.
But we didn't talk about it. We would just take a walk on a Sunday afternoon. And we were looking for a hill to put an underground house in it. And we studied, we read books on it, and the main reason why we were looking for an underground, looking to build an underground house was because our air conditioning was out in the mobile home. And man, it was hot. It was a little oven. And we couldn't live that way, so we were thinking about building underground so we'd always be cool. So we looked to see what we would build it with. I drew the plans, even to the outlets. And we didn't need the blueprint. Clayton could read it just fine. And we went, when we were building, he had all the plans. He knew what he wanted. He did everything. And then it came to the roof. And we didn't know what we were going to do with the roof. So, lo and behold, I don't know who gave us the idea or whether Clayton got the idea, because Clayton had ideas that were so good always. And he decided that we would use bridge beams. So we went to just north of Austin, where they made the bridge beams. And they had us to draw the roof where the chimneys would come out, the bathroom vents, and everything. And Clayton did all of that. And we had to hire a, what you call a cherry picker. It was a high cable, and they brought all of the bridge beams out on a truck, and they had them stacked the way it would be to go on the house. And every outlet was right. And but before that, before I got to back up a little, we did build an underground house, and I'll tell you more about that later. But when we decided to build an underground house, we hired the Upton brothers first, my first cousins. And they wanted to take down a beautiful live oak tree that we didn't want to take down. And we hit solid rock at 2 feet. So it had to be blasted. And in the meantime, Clayton wanted that tree, and he wouldn't use the Upton brothers. And in order to find someone to do that, he had me looking during the daytime while he was at work for someone that would blast that hole in the ground that we was going to have. And I went to Florence, and I sat in a cafe and had coffee. And I began to talk about someone that we were going to build an underground house, and someone that would know how to blast it. And they told me, someone right there in Florence that worked for Featherlight. Featherlight is the one we bought the bridge beams from. And also they had a rock quarry, and they made everything. And they had a dynamite monkey.
A dynamite monkey?
Yes.
A demolition man.
Well, they called it, called a monkey then.
A dynamite monkey?
Yes. And so the man came out here, and Clayton told him, this is how smart Clayton was. He said, I want it up the whole 17 feet at the back and 6 feet at the front. And that man blasted it, guaranteeing us that there would be not one rock anywhere. But we did find one rock that went all the way to the barn. Now, I forgot to tell you about the barns, but Clayton built the barns also. And there was one rock out there. And then whenever it was blasted, it was on a Sunday night at 7 o'clock. I don't know what month it was, but it made just a mound of rock. Small rock, big rock, every kind of rock. And the neighbors began to come to see it because they heard the blast. And we sold all of the rock out of that big hole, 17 feet deep and 6 feet at the front. We sold it for $1 a load. And they came with their trucks and their dump trucks and backhoes and everything. And they took the rock out of that hole and paid us $1 a load. And they made their roads out of it because it was real muddy out here. And they couldn't hardly get to their house because it was so muddy. So they bought the rock, and I don't know whether how they got it to make roads out of it, but all the neighbors out here have got roads made from the rock that came out of this hill. And now back to the underground. There's so much to tell about the underground that I'm going to take a break right now. So I'm telling about the underground. I started a book on it, but it got so busy that I couldn't write in it because I wanted to remember everything. But the neighbors were always around. And when we were building the underground, there's an archway in it. And it took us 3 years to build it. But there was an archway in it, and our neighbors had three young sons then, and they held the arch up while the man put the brick around it. And also...
Now, the man, you're talking about somebody you had to hire because one...
Yeah, we had to hire this man. No, we didn't. We had to hire someone to cut a pattern for the archway. And the three boys held it up while Clayton put the brick around it. Clayton did almost everything except at one time, and it was after the archway, he got a triple hernia from lifting the blocks that we built the house out of. And right now I need to stop and tell you what the house is built out of. It's built out of haydite blocks. That's what it looks like. Only they were called ivany blocks because they didn't have an end in each end like a haydite block does, so that the steel could go around, all around the house. And the cement truck had to be here to fill all the walls that were made out of those blocks, and the steel, half inch steel in each block. So that's a lot of steel and a lot of concrete. But they, Clayton handled all of it that he could, but he did get a triple hernia. And we had to hire the man to put in the wall that goes from between the front and the back of the house. The two bedrooms are on the back, two bedrooms and two baths, and a short hall, 6 foot hall. And they were, forgot where I was. Oh, he had to hire a friend of his that laid block. I mean, that was his business. He made haydite walls. And while Clayton was in the hospital, the man got on the wrong side of the string where it was marked. So he put the wall further into the kitchen, I mean further back. The bedrooms turned out to be 13 feet wide. Well, there was more to it than that. The width of a haydite block off, that's how much it was off.
So it made the bedrooms a little bit smaller.
It made the bedrooms a little bit smaller, and the kitchen was bigger. Mm-hmm. And so the pattern for the arch was used for the hearth that was in the middle of the house, with and we put a wood stove in. That was our heat. And we didn't keep the wood stove up, but just until 2005. We moved in June 1981. And we kept the fireplace and the wood and the heat until 2005, or well, it was earlier than that, because Clayton wasn't able to do the work anymore. He was very sick. And he had so many things wrong with him, and he had a stroke. And so we quit using the wood stove because it got it too hot. And we couldn't, we'd have to take wood out of the stove and take it outside because they would get the house too hot, so too quick. And I think I stole the stove. Yeah, I sold that critter.
Sold
the stove. And we didn't need that heat. But anyhow, we had a housewarming. Really, it was just a singing from the church.
I remember that.
In June. And there was deer horns on the wall, the middle wall, and over the fireplace, and water was dripping off of the horns after the singing, and we found out that every body person brings in 600 cubic feet of heat when they come in the house, and that was the reason we had that much heat.
I remember it was hot. We were all sweating.
Yeah.
It was, but it was fun. It was real hot.
But in the meantime, we were living in the mobile home, and we had fish fries. Clayton and I would go fishing. We had a standing place, there's a word for it, but I can't remember it right now.
A reservation.
Appointment. We went to fish every 31st of March. That was when the white bass were spawning.
Where
at?
Was that Lemons Camp?
Lemons Camp,
yeah.
And it's at, I thought of this last night.
The Bend.
And we had about three or four fish fries, and we would have from 75 to 100. And I would borrow all the tables and chairs all around, and we had a whole big yard of people. And Clayton fried all the fish, he cleaned all the fish, and I made hush puppies, hundreds of hush puppies. And he took care of it. Him and his neighbor, our neighbor friends, took care of the fish fries that we had. And so we moved in June 81, and we have been in, it is now 2012. Clayton died in 2005. I'll get to Clayton later because there's so much I want to tell you about him. He was smart, and nobody knew it but him and me, how smart he was to build this house and to plan this house and to build every outbuilding that is around here. And when we moved out here, we were the only house. No, we built a house from, I don't know whether, I can't remember when Mary moved out here. But we gave each one of the kids 2 acres of land. And they could build on it if they wanted to. And then later on, we gave them 8 more acres. So that they each had 10 acres. But I get these ideas and I'm just running ahead of myself all the time, and I have to think, well, you don't want to tell that now. But anyhow, Mary moved out. There's now 5 houses out here. I have five grandchildren out here. And so it's civilized now. But we sold the mobile home for as much as we gave for it, and we lived in it 10 years. And one offer is all. We didn't even put an ad in the paper. A man found out about it. We had a fireplace in the mobile home, too, that Clayton made in the mobile home because we had so much wood out here. And this man came and offered us what we paid for it. And they came out and got it, and it was for his daughter to live in at Sam Houston State College. And they came out when we weren't even here. They took the fences down, they took the gateposts down, they fixed everything, and we were blessed again and again and again. And the grandchildren that are living out here now are Mary's daughter, Kara, and her husband and two children, and Aletha and Nathan and Nisha are all living out here now. And Junior has 10 acres that he hasn't done anything with. It's just growing up, and you can't hardly even hunt on it because of the growth. And I'm going to try to talk him into clearing it, having it cleared. That was one of my thoughts today that I was going to do. And I've got to take another break and get my thoughts together.
Well, I'm going to tell a story that I remember, and Mother will probably do some correcting, but I remember during the building of this house, I believe that the cabinets were in, and the shell was done, and I believe that they went to church one Sunday and left the door open of the house, and it rained. And it rained, and it rained, and it rained. How many? Six inches? 6 inches while they were at church. So the door was open, and the French drain wasn't put in yet, maybe, or if it wasn't working right or something, and mud came into the house. And from what I remember, I was told it was 18 inches of mud, and they had to clean it all out and everything. And Mother will probably correct me a little bit on this, but I remember asking Daddy, I was telling Daddy that whenever after that happened, I said, what if this happens again? What are you going to do if you've got carpet down and you've got furniture in here and it ruins it? And I remember what my daddy said. He said, I've already taken care of that. I've already talked to the Lord about it. And he says in his word that he will not push me farther than I can bear. And he already knows this is for as far as I can bear.
He cried.
He cried? Yeah. That was a turning point, kind of, at the house, wasn't it?
Well, it really wasn't 18 inches of mud, but all of the fans were in here, and the refrigerator and the stove, and they weren't put in their place. They were just on here handy whenever we wanted to put them in. And the reason it wasn't only just mud that came in. What the drain stopped up because of little pieces of wood and building material that was out in the front yard. And so the drain has stopped up again. It stopped up in 2011. I went to bed and it was raining, and it was raining hard. And I got out of bed. I thought, what if the drain stopped up, because we hadn't had any rain in a year nearly. And what if the drain stops up? And I got up, and when I opened the front door to look out, all the water came in. The drain was stopped up. And I called 911 and got the fire department from Florence to come out, and they never seen a French drain, and they didn't know anything. And it was raining so hard that they ran off in the pasture, not at the house. I don't know how they found the house, because I don't think any of them had a brain cell working. But Mary unstopped. She showed them how. She unstopped the French drain. And, I mean, it didn't suck the water out of the house. There was 2 inches of water in the house then. and it was clear, it was clean water. It wasn't any mud. And she came down the next day, and she vacuumed 5 hours to get the water out of this house. And the fire department never did a thing except make a bunch of heavy ruts in my pasture that comes down here. And so that was one of the things that happened. And whenever, I got to tell you something else about the 6 inches of rain. I don't know how it was on Sunday morning, because I don't remember it being on a Sunday morning. Well, part of it was. But it was raining and raining and raining. And we had little Carol with us. She was about 6 years old. And she just lost it, because the wind was blowing so hard and raining so hard that Clayton couldn't even go into McCoy's to buy things that we needed to build the house. And we had to, all the fences were down and all of the creeks and the rivers were up, and we couldn't get home. So finally we found a way to get home. We came across Crow Ranch. At that time it was hardly anything but a trail, but well, two tire treads. But now it's paved and everything. But we ran over fences and everything. It was a flood. Now this flood that happened out here, when the drain got stopped up again, was a 10-inch rain. And Toledo nearly washed away. And we know what a lot of rain is, and I don't know whether there's very many of us praying for rain, but we do need a rain. Now we've got a drought, but that's because of the El Niño something that's going on. Everybody knows why we got a drought. Only Junior is not in a drought where he lives. He lives at Flower Mound, if you want to look it up on the map. And he has had plenty of rain. Even Waco has had plenty of rain. But this area that we live in has not had enough rain. And I don't want one ever again. I don't ever want 10 inches again. And where the mobile home used to be, before we moved into the underground, Clayton built a house. He started from a deck that was on the mobile home. He started with a deck and he put walls around that. Then he built another room. Then he built a bathroom. And now there's a house down there that is 825 square feet. One bedroom. And that's a rent house. He built that so that I would have a little bit more money to live on after he was gone. And he was gone before you know it. And later on, I'll get into his life, because he had a wonderful life. It was just as poor as we were. No, I got to tell you this right now. They were poor. They had 10 children. Mr. and Ms. Bell never owned a home, but they lived out in the countries in the old houses that wouldn't rent. They were so old. And when it snowed out there, there was in the beds where Clayton was and all the kids that lived out there that were still at home, there would be ridges of snow on the cover that they were sleeping under, the quilt that they were sleeping. And it would be every 12 inches, because there was 12-inch boards on the outside. Mm. And that's how cold they were.
Good.
And they had nothing but a fireplace. And Ms. Bell would get up. They raised chickens. So she would get up and she would wring the neck of the chickens and fix them, and she would fry maybe 2 fryers for that family to eat. And later on, I hope I get around that. She was killed. She was hit by a car crossing Highway 84 to get her mail, and she was hit by a car, and she lived for a while in awful pain. But Mr. Bell, I believe he was the first to go. I can't even remember. Do you remember?
No, I remember going and seeing Grandpa Bell in the rest home.
Yeah, well, he...
And we would go there, like, once a week. We'd go visit him, and he had a favorite song that he always wanted us to sing, and it was called Peace Like a River. And no doubt, it was one of his favorite song because it had a bass lead, and it went like this, and Daddy sang it. Peace like a river so gently is flowing, how sweet to my soul is his wonderful peace.
Sweeter
and sweeter each day it is growing, like billows of glory that never shall cease.
Fill with the Spirit. I can't sing it, it's too high for me. See, I would get down in your range if I tried to sing it.
Yeah.
I'm not a soprano singer. You'll find out later on that I can't sing.
I hadn't sung that song in so many years. I did forget the words for a minute, though, but you mouthed them to me, so I was able to get through at least that. But
what do you think about that?
Yeah.
See, there's so many ideas and words and everything that are going through our minds that sometimes we just have to stop and think, what was I talking about?
Oh, you were talking about Daddy and how smart he was, and his family and how poor they were. Y'all weren't poor. Your family.
No, not
that. So when y'all got married, it was sort of like the rich marrying the poor.
Yes.
And Mr. and Miss Bell, Mr. Bell and Mr. Hayes didn't like it. And, well, we've already told that story.
Yeah.
That they tried to keep y'all apart, which didn't work.
Didn't work. I'll just say right here, I might have already said it, but we were married 61 years.
Yeah.
And we were married. We were both teenagers when we married.
Yeah.
And we had 3 wonderful kids, and they have all been singers. Are still singers.
Yeah.
And I told you that story too.
And so. All of them have been married many times. Let's see, how many marriages? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 marriages, 3 kids.
I don't know. Junior is on his, they are still looking for that perfect marriage. I think Mary was married twice, and
yeah,
she's single now, and she has an adopted son, which I told you about. Jenner is in his 4th marriage.
Last one,
he says. There won't be another one.
Yeah.
And Glenda is married, I don't know whether I told you this or not, but this is her 3rd marriage, and she met him on the internet.
Yeah.
And I told you the story of him. Okay, now we're at a standstill again because we don't know where we were when we were talking.
Let's go back to the house. The house we're sitting in right now is the one that Daddy built, and that you and Daddy built.
Mm-hmm.
Daddy can't take all the credit because I know that you did a lot of work out here. Both of you did. And there's pictures to show for that. But it is a very fine house, and it'll probably be here for
ever.
Forever. It's solid. It's got a bedrock foundation and then cement on that, and then it's got cement walls that have occasionally leaked, but boy, I tell you, you can't say anything bad about it because, well, my daddy made it, you know, so.
It's, and it's perfect temperature.
Yeah.
It, right now,
yeah,
it is about 85 outside, even though this is February. And in this house, I have to wear a sweater.
Yeah.
It might be 70 degrees. It might still be 69.
Yeah.
Usually I can take the sweater off at 70, and I've still got it on. So, and in the summertime, it has got up to 80. We had to put air conditioning in because of the humidity and the body heat that comes in. So we've got just two vents in the whole house, and they are in the kitchen area. And it is very comfortable. I'm still sleeping under a comforter at night. But in the summertime, the wintertime is the best because I hardly ever get to use the heat. The lowest it's ever been in temperature with no heat is 63 degrees, and that was last year. I was watching the thermometer closer last year, and it may have been lower years before, but I didn't know it. And I've got a little old 1500 watt heater, and I shut the bedroom doors, and it keeps my living room warm. And I don't have anything to gripe about. Everything is a blessing. And everywhere you look, you see Clayton. And everything that he did, he put in a ceiling that is, after we got the bridge beams on, we didn't have but 3 inches to put the wiring and everything. So he put in a, what kind of?
Suspended.
Suspended ceiling. That's what we have. And it's in 2x4 feet panels. And if anything goes wrong, you just remove a panel and fix it. And so we have no insurance. We have never had any insurance, except on a house that we had to finance, the 17th Street house we had to finance. So we had to have insurance on that. But this is good for everything. We could live without the heat. I mean, without the fans, if we had to. We can live without electricity, if we have to. Everything is self-sufficient. And Clayton has built every building, everything out here. He built 2 barns. He built a pump house. He built this house. And the garage, everything he has built. And I wish he could hear me say that, but I've said it to him before. And he is smart. He was the smartest man you would ever know. You are his grandchildren. And I wish you could see some of the pictures. He loved hunting. He loved fishing, and he saved our life twice out on the lakes when a squall would hit, wind would hit, and unpredicted under, it just hit, and he knew what to do with a motor, and he knew what to do with a boat. And he has saved our lives twice. And I'm going to stop talking again.
Well, since we're talking about him, I want to say this. And I've said this to people that I meet whenever I'm selling art. I've said it to a lot of people. I don't have any regrets about my daddy, except one. And that's maybe the reason well, when you don't have regrets, you don't grieve so bad whenever someone leaves you, like whenever daddy left. But there's one regret that I have, and that's that I didn't watch my daddy do the things that he did. Because I can't even change the oil in a car. I can't build a building. I was just kind of riding through life with my daddy, but I never watched him do stuff. So my knowledge of mechanics and building and stuff, I have none. When I first started making fountains, I just guessed at how to do something. I'd never done anything with my hands before. And so I had to teach myself. But if I had watched my daddy throughout all of his life and watched everything that he did, I would probably know how to work on a boat motor, a car engine. Of course, you can't nowadays, but I could probably build a little shed to put all my junk in.
Change a tire.
I can change a tire. I can do that. But that's really the only regret that I have about growing up with my daddy, is that I didn't pay attention to him, because I didn't think he was that smart, but he was. He had a lot of smarts, and I do regret that.
And he was very tender-hearted.
Yeah, even though he came across in the later years as an old fogey, as a Grinch, he was a gentle soul and a Christian. And unfortunately, he was such a Christian that he may have pushed people away from him because he was so staunch in his beliefs. But at least he...